Welcome to our sermon series entitled, Why the 21st Century Needs Christianity. Have your Bible ready, and let's begin.
So we're studying together why the 21st century needs Christianity. And we looked at science in Christianity, and then we looked at justice in Christianity, and then we looked at business in Christianity, and this morning, I would like us to look at education and Christianity. Dr. King said, "The function of education is to teach one to think intensively and to think critically. Intelligence plus character, that is the goal of true education." I'm going to start right out by saying the 20th century did its best to secularize everything. So basically when I say secularize, I mean to do everything it can without God. And little by little over the 20th century, schools went from being places where you prayed in the beginning of the day, and it wasn't uncommon for biblical stories to be told, to a place now where somebody sues you if you say anything that's Christian. And I'm going to argue that hasn't been good for our culture. That hasn't been good for humanity. Because at the basis of what makes America, America, is a moral code. The thing that makes us different from other countries all over the world is we have this moral code that we live by. And that moral code came into American culture through Christianity. We aren't an imperialist state. When we won World War II, we gave everything back to everyone. We kept nothing. Church, that impulse in American culture came out of Christianity. Have we made mistakes as a culture? Yes. We're only human. But I tell you, if you look at the 20th century, whenever there was a disaster anywhere in the world, some Americans were showing up with aid. Because it was our moral sense of being a good human being in a broken world. This problem of Christianity in a secular culture was dealt with profoundly in the New Testament because that's where we had our origin. Christianity had its origin in the pagan culture of the Greco-Roman world. And so Paul wrote to the church at Corinth, and this is what he said, "For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing. But to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. For it is written, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, and the discernment of the discerning I will thwart." I want to say right up front, going to college and university is not for everyone. I know our culture says, if you don't go to college, you don't have a career. Look, that's nonsense. I told you about the plumber in New York City that makes $150,000 and has no student debt. I went to college in the university and the seminary for 20 years. I've never made $50,000 a year. I think he's doing pretty good for himself. There is a myth that everybody has to go to college. It's a myth. Parents, your kids may not thrive at college in the way that they would thrive in another career. Don't browbeat them into something that they're really not hardwired for. On the other hand, if they are, there are wonderful opportunities by going to college, university. I would like to add, though, Every parent should help their children do a cost to value analysis. I just read an article that there are a growing number of jobs that you don't make enough in that job to pay for the education they say you need to have that job. Is that crazy? When you want to know one of the jobs that was on the list? Assistant pastor. Something's wrong at seminaries if you're charging kids so much money, they're so far in debt, they can't do the job they feel called to do. I don't drive a platinum pickup. Not because I don't like them. I don't drive them because they don't fit my budget. Church, why is it that all across our life, we look at our budget and decide what we can afford? But when it's time for kids to go to college, if that kid can't afford a $40,000 a year college bill, but if the college will accept them, we think, whoa, they got to go there. I went from everything from Lorain County Community College to Case Western Reserve. And I'm going to tell you this, I got as good education at Lorain County Community College for a lot less than I got at Case. It is a myth, church. And at some point, parents are going to have to start helping their kids figure this out. Kids are graduating from college $80,000, $100,000 in debt. I talked to a family that attended here some years ago, and the husband was $120,000 in debt, and his wife was $80,000 in debt. They were $200,000 in debt, and neither one of them had a job. So I want to push back on this wrong cultural expectation. And I'm not talking from the outside. I went to college, seminary, and university for more than 20 years. More than 20 years. From the early 70s to the mid 90s. Slow learners have to go longer. I'm sorry. That's just. Let me get started. University comes from the word universe. Can you hear it? Universe, university. What does it mean? It means university means the place where the whole body of things and phenomena observed and postulated are studied. Now listen. The whole body of things and phenomenon that are both observed and postulated. Postulated means you can think about it and make a sentence. The university is supposed to be a place where all ideas are at least considered. I'm arguing that true Christianity is marginalized in education, and we go to monoversities that promote agnosticism at best and atheism at worst. I've been mocked in the classroom because I believe that Christ rose from the dead. Mocked. Jordan Peterson teaches at the University of Toronto. He is a psychology professor. I think I have his picture, don't I? He's a psychology professor. Listen what he wrote recently. Ideologies are simple ideas disguised as science or philosophy that purport to explain the complexity of the world and offer remedies that will perfect it. Ideologues are people who pretend they know how to make the world a better place before they've even taken care of the chaos in their own life. Ideologies are substitutes for true knowledge. All right, this isn't a pastor. It is a psychology professor who makes his living teaching at the University of Toronto. And listen to what he says. There is a problem. And the problem is there are ideologies that disguise themselves as science and they disguise themselves as philosophy. But they're really just the raging opinions of someone who got the job. Do you get it? My argument is this. Christianity is as valid as any worldview. The problem is, at school, it gets marginalized. And it doesn't get marginalized because it isn't powerful and true. It gets marginalized because of the ideologies of too many people who've gotten career chairs and aren't really responsible to the people who pay their salaries. Are you with me, church? If we're going to be influential in the 21st century, we have to push back against this. I didn't raise my children to send them to universities to be turned into pagans. I raised my kids and sent them to university so that they could get an education and be a better person. I want them to be educated, not indoctrinated by an ideologue. Church, Christianity is a thinking religion, and I'm dragging you through these sermons one way or another. We're going to do it together. What is the fracturing point? For the word of the cross is folly to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. I will not compromise, no matter how you belittle me, on the word of the cross. It has had a powerful influence on humanity for 2,000 years. It's proved itself again and again. Yes, I believe in separation of church and state. But separation of church and state does not mean the categorical exclusion of Christian thought and history from all education. There's a difference between the separation of church and state and excluding Christianity from everything. The challenge for the church and parents is to demonstrate the thoughtfulness of Christian theology so that its profundity competes with the other disciplines. All right, now I'm going to talk about our responsibility. We have dumbed down Christianity to the point that our children don't believe that it can compete with other disciplines. We've done everything we can to make Christianity so simple and so easy, and we've robbed our children of the necessity of struggling to think about their faith. So that when they go to the university and they read a really hard book, they think, this must be smart. Compared to the silly little books I grew up reading in Sunday school. Church? We say ridiculous things like, God is like an egg. If God is like an egg, he can't compete in the university, church. God is nothing like an egg. He's infinite, he's eternal, he's immortal, he's awesome, he's majestic, he's holy in wonder and majesty. And he can compete with any discipline the university has to offer if we will expect and create situations where our kids have to think deeply. The flannel graph Jesus won't work in the 21st century. We have to have a more thoughtful presentation of the depth and the riches and the power of Christian thought. And mom and dad, you're going to have to help with that. You're going to have to help with that. You're going to have to do some deeper thinking and have some deeper conversations with your kids. The Christian worldview can compete with anything, when we do our homework. It can't compete with cartoons when we don't do our homework. The highest aspiration we can have for our children is for them to be wise and moral. Wise people thrive in a rapidly changing world. What is wisdom? It's the ability to think in reality and not in illusion. Listen to what Teddy Roosevelt said. To educate a man in mind and not in morals is to educate a menace to society. I believe I see that on the news all the time. What is the challenge to the university? They have to remember their roots. I want you to know that the greatest universities in England, Scotland, and America were started by churches. Churches gave the money. Churches built the buildings. Read the motto of the Ivy League schools and hear all the Christian themes that are in those mottos. The university needs the word of the cross. Education needs the word of the cross. What is the word of the cross? Heroic sacrifice is of greater value than temporary wealth and vain self-indulgence. I'm telling you what our kids need to hear is a call to sacrifice, not a reinforcement of entitlement. Church, our children need to hear that the noble life is a life that sacrifices something. It is not the entitled life where everybody around me sacrifices and I live leisurely. Our Lord Jesus Christ set a different example, and his example is the word of the cross. Paul went on, he said this, where is the one who is wise? Where is the scribe? Where is the debater of this age? Has not God made foolishness the wisdom of the world? For since in the wisdom of God, the world did not know God through wisdom, it pleased God through the folly of what we preach to save those who believe. Now, Paul asks four questions here, and with your permission, I'm going to turn them into a more modern form. Where is the one who is wise? I'm going to change that into this question. How do we define wisdom, and who best represents it? When was the last time you had a discussion in your home? How, as a family, do we define wisdom? And who do we think best represents this wisdom? I want to be clear. I've read philosophers, I've read historians, I've read scientists, I've read novelists, I've read psychology. I want you to know the one I believe that is the wisest is Jesus Christ. None of them can compete with him. The people who heard him teach, if you read the Gospels, they continually said, "This is amazing." I don't know the last time I went to school, heard a lecture, and said, "That's amazing." I normally said, "I'm glad that is over." People walked for miles to hear Christ speak. They went without food to hear Christ speak. And on one occasion, people heard him speak, and they said, "Never has anyone spoken like this man." Church, he is wise. He represents a wisdom that is greater than the limitations of humanity. The second question, where is the scribe? I'm going to turn that into who's doing the thinking and writing. This is hugely important. When we hand our kids books, who did the thinking in that book and who wrote that book? And what are their biases? What are their ideologies? Do we teach our kids to read critically and say, that's their opinion, but does their arguments prove their opinion, or do they just browbeat you with their opinion? 3, where is the debater of the age? Who frames the debate and who gets a seat at the table? You see, in education, there have to be discussions. I really believe that's why our life groups are so important, because you get to have one-on-one discussions and you get to talk about things and think about things and clarify things. On Sunday morning, you just have to listen to me yell for a half hour. It's your religious duty. Listen to this. In education, there are discussions. Who creates the discussion questions? And what sources are permissible? Do you see? Who says, this is the discussion we're going to have, and these are the sources that are permissible in this discussion? Finally, has not God made foolish the wisdom of the world? How does God evaluate the present academic debate that excludes him consistently? Church? All right, now, don't get me wrong. I don't think you have to talk about God, Jesus when you're doing biological chemistry. But I am saying, when you do an American history and you don't talk about Christianity, you have not dealt with the reality of American history. Church? When you talk about Abraham Lincoln and you say nothing about the nights he prayed and prayed during the Civil War, you're not being honest about American history. God is not known through the scientific method. I accept that. God is often misunderstood in the philosophy of his humanity. I accept that. But I do have a problem when God is dismissed in the political correctness that despises the past and rushes toward a mythical socialistic utopia. I have a problem when Christ is dismissed because he's not politically correct and he doesn't support the ideology of some fabled socialist utopia that the professor is trying to shove down our kids' throats. If you're a professor, I'm not picking on you, please. Alan Bloom was a professor. I think I have his picture. Dr. Bloom taught at the University of Chicago, wrote books, was recognized as one of the greatest scholars in America during his lifetime. I want to read a quote to you. I'm sorry, Bloom wrote long sentences, so I'm going to break this up a little bit. The United States... In the United States, practically speaking, the Bible was the only common culture. One that united simple and sophisticated, rich and poor, young and old. It was the very model for a vision of the order of the whole of things. It was the key to the rest of Western art. Because the greatest works which were produced in one way or another are a response to the Bible. It also provided access to other serious books. Alan Bloom isn't, so far as I know, a Christian apologist. He is a professor, he was a professor at the University of Chicago. And listen to what he says. One of the things that held America together when we used to be a melting pot instead of a collection of special interest groups, one of the things that held us together was the Bible. It united simple and sophisticated, rich and poor, young and old. It created a vision for the whole of life. And it had a positive effect on making America what we are. And when we reject the Bible in education, we destroy one of the things that held us together as a culture. Is it any wonder now that you can't get any two groups to agree on anything at any time at all? We have lost a shared culture, and part of the reason we lost it is we abandoned one of the things that held us together. Christianity must risk being considered a stumbling block and being foolish to challenge the hegemony of the university. Let me tell you what hegemony means. I'm sorry, I tried to find another word. I couldn't do it. It means the dominance of a single idea. The university stopped being a university and it became a monoversity. It is the dominance of a single idea. You have to agree with that or you're marginalized. We have to challenge that, church. We have to challenge that. Let me say this. We pay the bills. Your tax bills pay for education. It's not free. Why is it that when a Marxist teacher goes to the university, he's never intimidated or she's never intimidated to shout Marxism all day long in every way they can? I heard a Marxist teacher say the parable of the talents where Christ gave five to one, two to another, one to another one. That it was, the parable was teaching how terrible it is to be an entrepreneur and make money. That was his interpretation of that passage. Marxists are never afraid to say whatever they want in the classroom. But Christians get intimidated like, well, separation of church and state. What does separation of church and state have to do with us saying we have basic expectations about what should be included in our kids' education? Church? You have basic expectations about what your kids eat, don't you? You don't let them eat Twinkies for breakfast, lunch, and supper. Well, maybe you do. But you have some expectations. You have expectations about your kids' health. You have expectations about your kids' safety. We're allowed to have Christian expectations about the education of our kids. The Jews demand a sign. The Greeks seek wisdom. But we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to the Jews and folly to the Gentiles. But to those who are being called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ is the power of God and the wisdom of God. For the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. Jews demand a sign. This is empirical evidence. Empirical means what can I see, touch, feel, smell, hear. They want signs that are tangible. Well, that's happening in the world today. It's not uncommon to hear people say, if it isn't made of matter, it doesn't exist. I don't believe that, church. I believe there is a universe that is made of matter, and I believe greater than that universe is something that is not made of matter. The Greeks seek wisdom. The Greeks wanted philosophy. but they wanted a politically correct philosophy. They killed Socrates because his philosophy was not politically correct in Athens. The death penalty. And today, universities have gone so far that there are even debates about what do we have to do to make sure the freedom of speech is guaranteed in our learning institutions. To disagree with someone is called a microaggression. Church, I'm not making this up. Christianity offers Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. Listen to what Patterson said. The Bible is, for better or for worse, the foundational document of Western civilization. That's not a Christian man saying that. That's a psychology professor saying that. The Bible is, for better or for worse, the foundational document of Western civilization. Why is the Bible and Christianity necessary in education? Because the foolishness of God is wiser than man, and the weakness of God is stronger than man. I want to read you another quote from Alan Bloom. The crisis of liberal education is a reflection of a crisis at the peaks of learning. An incoherence, an incompatibility among first principles with which we interpret the world, an intellectual crisis of the greatest magnitude, which constitutes the crisis of our civilization. I can say this in an easier way. What's the problem? The problem is we've abandoned important first principles. I read a book several years ago, and the whole book was, how did America, that didn't spend a fraction on the education of kids that we spend now, produce people who were so smart that they wrote the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that have been a model for other nations ever since? You know George Washington never went to school? Do you know that Thomas Jefferson went to a college that only had 5 professors? And I don't think in the 200 years of our history, I don't think any political document has ever been written that matches the genius of the Declaration of Independence. Anybody? It's unparalleled. And you know what he gets? He gets the insult. Well, I don't have to take him serious. He's a dead old white man. The man was 33 or 34 when he wrote the Declaration of Independence, church. How is it that these people who didn't have access to the education that is just common in every town and village in America produce such awesome thinking? They had first principles. They figured out there are things in life that are foundational, and if you don't deal with them right, you can't succeed. He was a 33 or 34-year-old man who said, here is the first principle. We hold this to be undebatable, that all men are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That is a first principle. It can't be debated. It is a statement of reality, and you have to deal with it, church. And what Bloom says is, we've lost the power of first principles in education. And now we want performance tests, and now we want kids to do this and to that, to do that. And you can get a whole college education and never be confronted with what Alan Bloom calls first principles. Church? And that's where the world needs us. We have to be the ones who understand the first principles, the great ideas that God put into creation and into reality that have to be dealt with because they're not going to change. Education is the leading of human souls to what is best and making what is best out of them. John Ruskin. Parents, I want to say this to you. As Christian parents, we have to be more influential with our kids. Church, I want to say this to us. As a church, we got to create the very best and a demanding environment for our kids as they grow up, so that they think more deeply and more deeply about the first principles that Christianity shares with the world, because then they will be ready to compete in the university. If we don't do this, we're going to send our kids to the university, and the university is going to make them into secularists and pagans. The things they believed when they left home, they're going to come home not believing. Unless we make it our agenda to make sure that in the 21st century, the church stays active and on the cutting edge of what a real education is and what are the necessary elements of that education. The 21st century education agenda needs the church. And we can't be browbeat and kowtowed. We can't be humiliated and pushed aside. We have to speak up. The world needs us.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information about Christ Church, check us out on the web at christchurchohio.org. If we can be of any help to you, call us at 440-236-8282. Until next time, blessings to you.